Hello, and a somewhat parched late July welcome to this edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper, with today being the turn of the Red Team to bring you the latest news from our region, recorded at our Dawlish studio on Friday, the 24th of July, 2026. After another week of high temperatures, desiccated gardens, and a brand new Prime Minister and Cabinet, we hope you can sit back and coolly enjoy this week's programme. I'm John Townsend, leading our team of eager volunteers armed with the latest news stories. I'm joined by four other readers this week, and as usual, I'll conclude with entertainment on offer at the Shaftesbury Theatre Dawlish and Pavilions Tynmouth, plus other events for early August. So, with the latest news stories at hand, let's take a look at this week's front pages. Both the Tynmouth Post and Dawlish Gazette have identical headlines, leading with the shocking national news story about the death of a local politician. Man is charged with Anne's Dartmoor murder. Although an accompanying article relating to the opening inquest into Anne Widdicombe's death gives inconclusive causes at this stage, the circumstances of her murder have appeared in the national press and on international news. So, what does our local paper tell us about this horrific incident from the edge of Dartmoor, Mary?
Well, as you say, the headline is Man is Charged with Anne's Dartmoor Murder, which does place it firmly in Devon. A man has appeared in court charged with murdering Anne Widdicombe by hitting her 21 times on her head with a hammer. Joshua Kerry, 28, from Rotherham, South Yorkshire, appeared at Westminster Magistrates Court over the death of Reform UK spokeswoman and former Tory minister. Kerry was arrested on suspicion of murder on July the 11th, 2 days after Miss Widdicombe, 78, was found dead at her bungalow in Hay Tor. Kerry was also arrested on suspicion of the commission, preparation or instigation of acts of terrorism, but he has not been charged with this offence. Kashif Malik, prosecuting, said that on July the 8th, Miss Widdicombe did not attend a pre-arranged online interview just before 1 p.m, which would have been aired live on Channel 5's Matt Allwright show. The show's production team tried to contact Miss Widdicombe through her personal assistant, who then asked the family gardener to check on her. Prosecutors said he found the politician lying face down on her kitchen floor with a serious head injury the next day, July the 9th. Mr. Malik said that on July the 8th, Miss Widdicombe had been eating lunch when Kerry allegedly pulled up outside her house in a red Vauxhall Corsa and entered through the front door. A provisional cause of death was given as a blunt force injury to the head, the court heard. Bearded Kerry, who appeared in the dock wearing a grey tracksuit, spoke only to confirm his name, date of birth and address. He was remanded in custody to appear at the Old Bailey later. Speaking outside New Scotland Yard on Monday, head of UK counter-terrorism policing, Lawrence Taylor, said detectives are still investigating any possible political or terrorist motivation.
Hi, this is Sarah, and my first story is titled Community Shop Wins National Praise for Service. A community-run village shop has been recognised nationally for the service it provides. Stoke-in-Tynehead Community Shop, which was set up in 2009, is a runner-up in this year's Rural Community Business Awards. The shop entered the Investor in People category in the 2026 Rural Community Business Awards run by Plunkett UK, a national charity supporting people in rural areas, set up and run businesses in community ownership. This category attracted over 80 other small rural businesses, with the shop being nominated as a finalist, along with two other businesses. The Stoke-in-Tynehead shop was a runner-up in this category and was recognised at the award ceremony held at the Royal Society of Chemistry in London. The village had been without a shop for a year before an enterprising group of residents got together to raise funds to reopen the existing store, which has now been running for 17 years. The shop plays a central role in the village on many levels. It is somewhere for local people to shop without using a car, and a place for residents to go and have a chat, get a coffee, pick up newspapers, post letters, do their grocery shop, meet friends, put up notices, and much more. It provides a hub for those less mobile, less confident, and older residents so they can feel supported and provided for by their community. Committee member Judy Bowden said, "The shop is the beating heart of the community. It is well respected and used by village residents and passers-by. We were able to support the village during COVID with a full delivery and safe services to villagers. The world has changed a lot since COVID, but Stoke and Teenhead Shop continues to prove that a truly local service is very much needed. It stocks a wide range of goods, many of them local, including jams, chutneys and pickles, sweet treats, with craft shelves stocking items from local makers. It is also licensed, again stocking local beers, ciders and spirits." And there's a lovely photo of the shop with Jen Rudd, the manager, and Joanne Westgate, committee member, who was responsible for putting the application in to Plunkett's.
Hatmaker seeks funding to get ahead in business. A traditional hat maker who was inspired by Indiana Jones's headgear is hoping to become a trader in the lost art. Tynmouth-based milliner Matthew Evans makes bespoke hats using skills and techniques that are hundreds of years old. He's now crowdfunding the £3,000 to set up a workshop where he can expand his business and pass on the traditional craft of hat making to others. He said, "I believe this is more than just a fundraising story. It's about preserving heritage, supporting independent craftsmanship, and ensuring that centuries-old skills aren't lost forever." Matthew studied costume production at Arts University Plymouth, but said his pursuit of traditional hat-making skills was more of a personal quest. He said, "I loved the Indiana Jones films and wanted my own indie hat, but could never find one good enough. So I started researching how they're made. I found an old school hatter and convinced him to teach me. These age-old skills are rarely found online or in books, so that was an amazing gift. I fell completely in love with the craft, everything being handmade from start to finish." Matthew, trading as Mad Dog Hats, has been making classic Indiana Jones style fedoras for the last few years and finding buyers via Instagram, but now wants to set up a website for his business. He said, "Every hat is made by hand, using time-honored methods, preserving skills that have become increasingly rare in today's mass-produced world. Like many traditional craftspeople, it's becoming more difficult to sustain this type of work financially. To help keep this historic craft alive and continue making handmade hats, I've recently launched a GoFundMe campaign. The support will help me invest in materials, tools, and continue producing bespoke hats while passing these traditional skills on to future generations." He's hoping his workshop will also become a hub for others to teach traditional crafts and pass them on to the community. And of course, there's a lovely photograph of bespoke hat maker Matthew Mad Dog Evans. And guess what he's wearing? A fedora, which looks lovely.
Waterborne boy racers targeted in safety warning. Speeding leisure craft users in the Teen Estuary are being targeted in a hard-hitting warning by Tynmouth Harbour Master. Rob Parsons says he's seen a significant increase in leisure craft and jet skis hurtling through the water much faster than the legal limit of 6 knots. So far, there hasn't been a serious accident, but several near misses have been reported and are being investigated. In a blunt social media post, Rob highlighted a fatal accident in Portsmouth Harbour in August 2025. A speeding boat hit a navigation beacon and all three people on board were thrown into the water. One passenger escaped with minor injuries. The driver and the other passenger were killed. He said the case illustrates how poor decisions and stupidity can result in loss of life, and warns that a similar accident could easily happen in local waters. He said some craft come round the point and think it's a free-for-all out to sea, whereas it's 6 knots out past the Ness for a reason. People that aren't waterborne mariners don't understand that things can change very quickly. They're in control of an exceptionally powered craft with a minimal qualification, if they have that at all. I'm trying to get on top of this and work with people before someone's injured, because it always seems to be that it's a fatality or injury that pushes things to change, and I'm not waiting for that. The maximum fine for a conviction of speeding in Tynmouth Harbour is £2,500. Rob deals with multiple phone calls about speeding vessels, with some people offering video evidence, but he's advising witnesses to report what they see immediately by ringing the Coast Guard. He said, if you see something dangerous, call 999, call the Coast Guard. That is the best conduit for anything safety-related on the water. The Coast Guard has the resources. It becomes coordinated and recorded in the best way possible.
More lights restored to Brighton Waterway. More of the replacement lighting aimed at brightening up Dawlish at night has been switched on. Now coloured string lighting has been installed at Tuck's Plot, the next stage in restoring the town's traditional decorative lighting. This comes in addition to lights along Dawlish Illumination Bridge, which are already in place. Famed for its lights along the Brook Waterway, Dawlish has been in darkness for 3 years after storms wrecked the previous illumination. Now a lengthy project to restore the town's glow is progressing further along the motorway. A spokesman for Dawlish Town Council said, "We're absolutely delighted to share that the new lights are being installed. These will beautifully brighten this stretch of the brook, creating an even more welcoming and attractive space for residents and visitors to enjoy all year round. We can't wait to see the light shining and this area glowing in the evenings." Damaged beyond repair in 2023 during severe storms, the brook has been without its illuminations ever since. The Town Council has been working with the Environment Agency to ensure permissions were in place for work to start. Members of the Town Council's Civic Communities Committee have been working behind scenes to ensure the return of the popular decorative lighting, choosing the style of lighting in a string format and moving in multiple colours. The Town Council was involved in lengthy negotiations with insurers, who took some time to resolve the claim. Money was earmarked in the 2024-25 budget for the replacements, which are remote and manual-controlled LED lights. The new look is a complete redesign, aiming at reducing the chance of damage in the future. The owners of holiday accommodation Pilchard Cottage said, "Work has started, and doesn't it bring back lovely memories of a twilight Dawlish evening. There's still a bit more work to do to bring the lighting further up the brook, but doesn't it look magnificent? Thank you, Dawlish Town Council."
Chance for charities to raise profile. A Tynmouth PR company is offering charities, social enterprises and small businesses the chance to win £1,500 worth of marketing and communications. Pilkington Communications Power Up competition is a UK-wide, but Director Jess Pilkington particularly wants to promote it locally. She's conscious that many charities, non-profits and small to medium enterprises lack the resources and expertise to raise their profile, and often those making the biggest difference in their communities are the least visible. She's offering two communications packages, each worth £1,500, as a way of giving something back to the community that has supported us while helping organisations across the UK grow their impact. For full competition details, you can log on to pilkington-comms.co.uk/power-up, and the deadline for entries is Friday, July the 31st.
Well, we've had a bit of a shuffle here, and I'm pleased to say we're joined by David and Molly. So apart from us being a little bit reorganised now, I think the council is being reorganised, David. Is that right?
I believe it is, John. Yes, indeed. According to this, my first article, Devon Council carve-up is a right dog's dinner. Yeah. Let's investigate, shall we? Several roads in Teignmouth are expected to become part of another council area under local government reorganisation. Cliff Road, Alta Vista and Woodland Avenue properties are in Dawlish Parish, which, under the new local authority structure, will become part of Exeter Council. However, the rest of Teignmouth will be joining Torbay. The reorganisation announcement sweeps away the current system of local authorities and replaces it with four giant unitary councils. This means Teignbridge Council will no longer exist after April 1st, 2028, and Newton Abbot, Kingstainton, King's Curzel and Teignmouth become part of Torbay Council. Ashburton and Bobby Tracy join Devon Coast and Countryside Council, while Dawlish, Kenton, Starcross and Exminster will join Exeter Council. Teignmouth Town District and County Councillor Liberal Democrat David Cox described the decision as a dog's dinner. He said it's total chaos and the poorest people will be worse off, asked to pay more and get worse services. This reorganisation will cost a lot of money. No one wanted it. No one asked for this. For residents, Exminster, however, joining Exeter may be more appropriate. County Councillor Alan Connett said, residents in Exminster and Holden Division look to Exeter for their services, shopping and hospitals, rather than Newton Abbot or Torbay. But he said, this is a dreadful waste of money. The government said any proposals would not carve up existing council areas, and yet that's exactly what it has done. The reorganisation will cost millions. That's money which could be spent on important services and fixing our roads. Dawlish Town District and County Councillor Liberal Democrat Rosie Dawson said she was not convinced Dawlish Parish will be better off as part of Exeter. She said, we have our own identity, history and strong community, and this needs to be not only recognised but empowered to flourish. I feel this decision to carve up Devon is detrimental to service delivery for vulnerable people too. Devolving power needs to be about the people and not be handed out by Westminster. Councillor Sally Morgan, Liberal Democrat, represents Bovey Tracy, which will become part of the new Devon Coast and Countryside Council. She said, I'm disappointed, but not surprised. They have chosen the worst possible option. The new council will be expensive to administer, and it's a huge area. It's already being called the Devon Rump.
This article is about Parish Council objects to business units plan. Plans to build 9 industrial units on a long vacant site in Starcross have been met with opposition from the village's parish council. River X Group Limited has applied to Teignbridge Council for permission to develop land off General's Lane with 9 commercial units, together with parking, landscaping and a boat storage area. But Starcross Parish Council has objected to the proposal, arguing it would be out of keeping with the character of the village. In comments submitted to the District Council, the Parish Council said it was concerned about the domination of that corner of the village by industrial units. The Council also questioned the overbearing appearance of the proposal, as well as criticising what it believes is a lack of consideration for traffic access and road safety. Its objection states that insufficient attention has been paid to the impact on what is a recreational and residential area. Despite opposing the current scheme, the Parish Council stopped short of rejecting development on the site altogether Instead, it said it would consider supporting a reduced scheme which enabled good local employment possibilities in a less industrialised setting. Planning documents argue the proposals would regenerate a site that has remained vacant and overgrown for years, while providing new employment opportunities. The design and access statement says the location is accessible by foot, bicycle and public transport, including nearby bus and rail links. It also maintains that noise and disruption generated by the development would be modest and would not have a negative impact on neighbouring homes. Timbridge Council is expected to make a decision by September the 21st. To view the associated planning documents and to comment on the application, visit Timbridge Council's planning portal and enter 26/00958/MAJ into the search box.
And my next item is Devon pushed into prolonged dry weather status. Devon has been placed into a state of prolonged dry weather as the region faces growing pressure following a series of summer heat waves. The Environment Agency has changed the status of Devon, Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly following England's warmest spring on record and a series of summer heat waves, warning that continued dry conditions could increase the risk of environmental problems across the county. The move does not mean a drought has been declared, but recognises that the area is experiencing sustained dry weather, with reduced river flows, drier soils, and increasing strain on natural resources. Joanne Lager, Environmental Planning and Engagement Manager at the Environment Agency, said Devon, Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly was the third Environment Agency area in England to enter prolonged dry weather status this year. Following the warmest spring on record and the third heat wave of the year, we could see a summer of environmental incidents ranging from fish in distress to algae blooms, she said. The Environment Agency urges everyone to do their bit and to use water more wisely. The more water we use, the less there is available for the environment. Although the start of 2026 was wet, rainfall between March and May was below average across the southwest. Heavy rain in early June was not enough to recover the shortfall, leaving soils drier than normal and contributing to exceptionally low river flows. The Environment Agency says some private water supplies, including boreholes, are beginning to experience difficulties in parts of the region. Officials are continuing to monitor the situation and prepare for possible environmental impacts, including fish being placed under stress and increased risk of algal blooms in rivers and watercourses. Residents across Devon are being encouraged to help reduce demand on water supplies by making small changes at home and in gardens. Suggestions include taking showers, repairing leaks, using a watering can instead of a hose pipe, and choosing eco settings on washing machines and dishwashers.
And here we've got an article on the Dolphin Pub in Kenton, which is to be renovated. And there's a very nice picture of a very nice looking pub called the Dolphin, which is not current, it's an AI image of what the Dolphin Inn in Kenton should be like when renovation work is finished. And it says, this is how the new look Dolphin Inn should look when renovations are complete. Now owned by the Kenton Pub and Community Group, the 4th Street Pub is set for a new lease of life, and this AI image is what is expected to look like, what it is expected to look like when finished. Planning permission has been granted by Timbridge Council to reinstate it and part change its use to form a new dwelling. Members of the community group say it is fantastic news. Treasurer Jane Archer said, Obviously, there is a long way to go with legal contracts and renovations, but we're now full steam ahead to get the job done. The group has raised £160,000 in pledge offers and is applying for grant funding and other sources of finance to go ahead with the purchase and renovations. Jane explained, "We have raised enough money to buy the pub with a bit to renovate, but we still need to raise more funds. We have a huge long way to go. We're now working to source some pots of money from grants and the lottery. We can't give an exact timescale of opening, but it won't be this year, more likely spring next year. The owner of the pub is on our side and has been very, very kind to us. We have 280 people who've offered pledges of money." She said the Dolphin Inn is a focal point of the village, which everyone has to go past and is looking very dilapidated and very sad. "Renovating the building will improve the village no end," she added. "Once the work is complete, the vision is to create a multi-purpose community hub for morning coffee, afternoon tea, and in the evening as a pub. To secure enough money is taking a lot of fundraising. As well as the quiz season, there's been the 5K Dolphin Dash fun run, and a pizza night is planned in August. Many of these events will continue once the pub opens. There were some hurdles the group had to navigate to get to the planning application stage. Architects for the project have managed to overcome major issues with a flood strategy for the building, which has previously flooded twice. The Dolphin Inn was rebuilt in its present position in the late 1860s, following the Great Fire of Kenton in 1856. Originally owned by the Powderham Estate, the historic building served the village for more than 170 years before closing in 2020. Its sale to the community group was agreed in principle to buy the larger part of the building in 4 Street, with the current owner retaining the accommodation section. Since it was last sold in 2019, it has been left empty, flooded twice, and been damaged by trespassers, and as a result, significant restoration work is needed. The planning statement by Timbridge Council said, "By reinstating the public house and accommodating a dwelling wholly within the existing envelope, the development preserves the character and appearance of the area whilst delivering high-quality residential accommodation that safeguards neighbouring amenities."
Well, now we move up to pumping up the pedal power on the streets of Dawlish. Elite cycle racing made a welcome return to Dawlish for the second year last Friday. No, it's not the Tour de France. This is something even more special. It's the Tour de Dawlish, bringing another evening of high-speed pedal power action to the town. Hosted in partnership between the South West Road Race Work Group and Dawlish Town Council, the British Cycle National Circuit Series event, and it saw national level riders go head to head on the course, battling for crucial series points and bragging rights too. Crowds gathered at key vantage points to watch the thrills, and in some cases, spills, as riders battled the seaside town's challenging course. As the penultimate round of the National Circuit Series and round 5 of the Ralpha Super League, the stakes were certainly high, with riders having to combine strategy, endurance and raw speed to master the fast technical circuit. And there's a plethora of pictures of which a feature bikes, of course, an assortment of Lycra, and also photos which encapsulate blood, sweat, and perhaps a few tears.
My next article is again about a pub. I don't know why I've been giving all these articles on pubs, but anyway. And there's a new word to me. I don't know if any of the listeners have heard of this word, called apart hotel, all one word. Combination of apartments and hotel, I guess. But anyway, let's see what it says. Green light for apart hotel at pub. Plans to transform a long derelict Dawlish Warren pub into a new apart hotel have been approved by Tonbridge Council. The Welcome Inn, which has stood empty since closing in October 2020, will be demolished to make way for the new development after the authority granted planning permission for the scheme, subject to a number of conditions. The application proposed demolishing the existing building and replacing it with an apart hotel, offering visitor accommodation, a coffee house and associated facilities. Planning approval is conditional on the submission of further documents, including a landscape and ecological management plan and a construction environmental management plan, before work can begin. According to planning documents, the development is intended to breathe new life into a prominent site in the heart of Dawlish Warren while strengthening the area's tourism offer. An apart hotel or apartment hotel is a serviced accommodation that blends the independence of a private apartment with the convenience of a traditional hotel. Guests will have access to a reception and concierge service, housekeeping, laundry and changeover services, as well as breakfast served in an on-site coffee house. The proposed layout includes a reception area, office space and operational facilities. A coffee house with an outdoor terrace will occupy part of the ground floor, with pedestrian access from Mount Pleasant Road. The remainder of the ground floor will include accessible rooms for disabled guests alongside dog-friendly accommodation. The first and second floors will provide a mix of guest rooms, while the third floor will contain a smaller number of accommodation units. Outside, the development will include 29 car parking spaces, storage for 30 bicycles, and an electric vehicle charging point. The scheme also places an emphasis on sustainability. Around 140 solar panels are planned for the building's flat roof, generating an estimated 49 kWp of electricity, with additional roof space available for further solar installations if needed. In the planning statement submitted with the application, developers said the project would positively transform this space by delivering a high-quality project that enhances key public visitors and revitalizes the heart of the area. The statement added that redeveloping the Welcome Inn would deliver substantial enhancements to the overall tourism offering in Dawlish Warren, creating modern visitor accommodation while bringing a long vacant site back into active use.
This long hot summer may well beat that long hot summer of 1976. 50 years ago. Of course, all of us here are far too young to remember that. Oh, David, perhaps you might remember.
Oh, I thought you'd say something like that, John.
I think they appointed a minister for drought.
They did, like a minister for drought, minister for snow, yes. Dennis Howell.
Yes, that's the chap. And I think he was appointed, and then the heavens opened, so he was obviously very successful.
Oh, totally.
The reason I'm, you know, harping on about the old days is because there's an article about 50 years ago in 1976 that happened in Sheldon. And I'll just share it with you for a bit of nostalgia. Sheldon Flower Show has invited Mr. Derek Giler and his wife, Paddy Lennox, to open the show. He is appearing at Torquay Pavilion with Eric Sykes and Hattie Jakes. Invalid out of the RAF police to join ENSA, Derek played an important part in the wartime radio show Itmar with Tommy Handley, one of the things that helped to boost morale and win the war. He invented a stock of characters
Frisby Dyke, who was actually a cobbler in Liverpool, Colonel Chinstrap, and Mrs. Mop, whose catchphrase was, I wonder if David knows.
Can I do you now?
That's correct, yes, yes, you got it. You will be appearing in Pete Murray Sold Out Open House at the Princess Theatre on Friday night. Now, you might remember, some of you, Pete Murray, who was a DJ. I think he did, well, he did lots of things, but I just looked him up. And, you know, he's still around, and in September he'll be 101.
Good heavens.
So there's a little bit of nostalgia. Mm. And I think today, David, it's your 10th anniversary being on Here and Now.
Well, it is. I was a little bit too modest to say anything yes. about that, but well, I have enjoyed it down the years, John.
Big congratulations. I think in wedding terms, I think 10 years is tin. So I'll be treating you to a tin of prunes later.
Oh, right. Thank you. That'll keep me regular.
So I think it's now over to you for some sport. There's not a lot of sport at the moment, but I think we've got a couple of
ones. Well, you've actually almost caught me unawares, John. I was just putting on my sun visor, my plus fours, and grabbing my three wood, because, as you remember, I'm the sports correspondent, or editor, really, of the Red Team, and my next item is golfers grapple in scorching sunshine. Timoth Golf Club's 2026 senior championships were held in scorching sunshine, as we've just said. 50 players set out on day one, and John Jackson, playing off three, produced the best round of the day with a gross 75. He was followed by Andrew Vickery, 81, and John Dabin, 82. The informed John Dabin carded the best net score with a superb 64 from Andrew Vickery and Richard Dunn, both on 70. It was then Pavly Sadonovic's turn to star on day two with a gross 79, but John's 84 was enough to give him the overall victory on 159, claiming the Tony McHale Trophy and the title of club champion. Pavly and Andrew were close behind on 166 apiece. John Dabin went around in net 74 in the second round, finishing on 138 overall and grasping the Alan Osborne Trophy, even with a 12 on one hole. Goodness gracious me. Ron Dodd, 140, was his closest challenger, followed by a trio on 144. And now we move to bowls, a sport I used to play with consummate incompetence, it must be said. And, well, this is about Dawlish Lawn Bowling Club. Well, they've continued it their successful programme of charity days with two well-supported events already held this year in glorious sunshine. Funds raised from the events will be donated to local good causes, including AIMS and Dawlish Celebrates Carnival. The May Charity Day was won by Simply the Best from the Railway Inn, while the June event saw Devon Dumplings take the top prize. The community is invited to come along to the next one on Sunday, July the 26th. As well as the bowling competition, well, look, there'll be a barbecue, licensed bar, raffle prizes and music throughout the day. What more could you want? Registration opens at 9:45 a.m. for a 10 a.m. start, with entry costing £12 per team. Places are limited to a maximum of 24 teams, so early registration is advised. A spokesperson for the club said, "Many thanks to everyone who has entered teams, helped out and supported our charity days. Your support has helped make these events such a success. The club hopes for another strong turnout as it continues to raise money for worthy local causes and the glorious English game of bowls."
My final article is concerning the Powderham Festival. I expect a lot of people who attended will have very special memories, but there's one lady who will have an extra special memory. And this article's headed, "Not All Heroes Wear Capes, Some Drive Buses." A bus driver's quick thinking helped a customer who had been at one of the Live at Powderham concerts reach her father before he died. Stagecoach leading driver Jamie McKenna has been recognised after going above and beyond to support the customer during a deeply emotional moment. While helping deliver the Powder and Festival transport operation, Jamie was approached by a customer who had received the news that her father had been rushed to hospital and was not expected to survive. With time critical and no immediate transport available from the site, Jamie quickly assessed the situation and stepped in to help, driving a bus to ensure she could leave the festival as quickly as possible and be with her family. Thanks to his quick thinking and compassion, she was able to reach her father and spend precious time with him before he died. She later contacted Stagecoach to thank the team, saying their support had meant everything to her family, adding, "Not all heroes wear capes. Sometimes they drive double-decker buses." Jamie said, "As a supervisor, you're always looking for a solution. There wasn't a service available at that moment, so I did what I could to help and get her on her way as quickly as possible. Sadly, her father passed away, but she was able to be with him in time." Jamie was keen to highlight the contribution of the wider team working at the event. He said, "The credit belongs to everyone involved. We were looking after thousands of people over the weekend, and everyone worked together to support our customers." Peter Knight, Managing Director of Stagecoach Southwest, said, "This story is a wonderful example of what being part of a community really means. Our colleagues don't just provide a transport service, they're there to support people when it matters most. The compassion shown by Jamie, alongside the teamwork of everyone delivering live at Powderham, reflects our belief that we're stronger together." And there's a very nice picture of Jamie McKenna in his bus driver's uniform.
Well, it's good to finish on a heartwarming story, isn't it? And so to entertainment next on offer in the week ahead in Dawlish and Tynmouth. Firstly, a reminder that Tynmouth Carnival begins this weekend with various events, displays and fairground, leading to a grand procession of floats through the town on Thursday, the 30th of July, followed by live music on the Den. Next Tuesday, the 28th of July at 2 p.m, at the Shaftesbury Theatre, the film The Notebook is showing, featuring Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams. It follows the lifelong bond between a working-class young man and an upper-class young woman, whose summer romance evolves into a powerful love story tested by time, distance and societal pressures. Told through tender readings by an elderly man to a woman with memory loss, the film blends youthful passion with themes of commitment and enduring affection. Acclaimed for its heartfelt performances and emotional depth, it remains a beloved romantic drama. Also on Tuesday the 28th at 2:30 and 7:30, and then on Wednesday the 29th at 2 p.m. at the Pavilions Tynmouth, it's the film Star Wars, The Mandalorian and Grogu, Certificate 12A. Then on Thursday the 30th of July, 2 p.m. and 4:30 p.m, the film Masters of the Universe, Certificate 12A, The Sword of Power leads Prince Adam back to Eternia, a world shattered under the fiendish rule of Skeletor. Joining forces with Teela and Man-at-Arms, Adam must embrace his true destiny as He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Well, more down to earth, on Friday the 31st is a live rock and roll concert at 7:30, 50 Years of Fender. This exceptional show takes audiences through the incredible story of how the world's most recognisable guitar became the iconic instrument we all know and love, told through the biggest songs and the influential household names that made it such an important part of modern music making. Tickets are £20 and the box office 01626 249 049. Meanwhile, some other dates for your diary. Tuesday the 28th, Dawlish Community
Dawlish Community Transport is going to Trego Mills. And then Saturday, the 1st of August, it's the Starcross Flower and Produce Show in the British Legion Hall. And it's also Shoulden Water Carnival. Then on Tuesday, the 4th of August, Dawlish Community Transport are going to IKEA and Dunelm. That's £13.50. I'll remind you of their telephone number, 01626 888 8890. Also on Tuesday the 4th, it's the Macular Society meeting at Bitten House in Tynmouth at 10 a.m. Friday the 7th of August, there's a trip to the Taunton Flower Show. That's £39.50. If you're interested, you need to add your name to the hub at Shoulden. Saturday the 8th of August, Dawlish Gardens Society plant sale is outside the Strand Centre in the morning. And Sunday the 9th of August, Bake Off for Takeoff in aid of Devon Air Ambulance. A selection of freshly baked homemade cakes and pastries are at Starcross Pavilions from 10:30 to 2:30. So with all sorts on offer in the days ahead, we come to the end of today's programme. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's Here and Now, as I close by wishing you a delightful week ahead, when it will be the turn of the Yellow Team to bring you the Talking Newspaper next Friday on the 31st of July. Just to say, there is likely to be some disruption to some of our weekly news programmes through August. Due to decorating work here at the Strand Centre, just outside our studio, some of our teams will be unable to access our copy and dispatch room. So it looks as if we, the red team, will have to take a break on the 21st of August, when we won't be able to send you a programme. But fear not, you'll hear from us again in September. This week it has been the pleasure of the Red Team to bring to you Here and Now. Our producer is Sarah Williams, and our other readers have been Mary King, Molly Atkin, and David Quay, with Diana Coulson overseeing copy and dispatch. So it's goodbye from them and from me, John Townsend. Until next time, goodbye.